Turl knew he had messed it up. He had had only a hint of the leverage connected to Knipe, and right now, he had been guilty of exposing that he was only pretending he knew. Numph knew that Turl really didn't know, and Turl never had really known what Numph was up to. A real blunder. "Well," said Numph, suddenly expansive, "you just run along now and do your job. I'm sure everything will work out just fine." Turl stopped outside the door. What the blast was the leverage? What was the real story behind it? Numph was no longer afraid. Turl could hear him chuckling. The security chief threw off the black cloud that threatened. He moved off. At least he had the animals, and he could carry on. And when he had finished with them, he could vaporize them. He wished he could also vaporize Numph. Leverage, leverage. He had none on Numph. And he had none at all on the animal. Turl would have to get busy. 9. The transshipment air was a loud clatter of hurtling shapes under the spring sun. A freighter had just roared in, and the ore it spilled was racketing onto the field. The blade machines were nudging about, hurrying the ore to the conveyors. The giant buckets clanked and rattled, halting jerkily to spill their contents on the conveyor belt. Huge fans roared to blast dust in the air. A fall of ore flowed onto the transshipment platform. Johnny sat amid the din, chained to the controls of the dust analyzer, sprayed with fanned dirt, and half-deafened from the clamor. What he was doing was cross-testing the consecutive loads on the belt for uranium. The fans beat a fog of ore particles into the air at this point in the progressive steps. It was Johnny's job to throw a lever that sent beams through the whirlwind, check the panel to see whether a purple or a red light went on, and throw levers that sent the ore on for transshipment, purple, or dumped it to the side and sounded an alarm, red. When the red came on, it was urgent to dump. He was not operating independently. He was closely supervised by Kerr, the assistant operations officer of the mine site. Kerr was protected by domed headgear. Johnny was catching the hurricane of dust and din full in the eyes and face. He did not even have goggles. Kerr walloped him on the shoulder to indicate that this bucketful could be sent on, and Johnny thrust at the levers. Kerr had been carefully chosen by the security chief as the very fellow to instruct the animal in the operation of mine site machinery, and Turl had his reasons. A midget for a cyclo, Kerr was only 7 feet tall. He was a geyser mouth, as they called it, since he chattered incessantly. Nobody bothered to listen to him. He had no friends, but tried to make them. He was reputedly dim-witted, even though he knew his machines well. If these reasons were not enough, Turl had leverage. He had caught Kerr in a compromising situation involving two female cyclo clerks in an out-of-bounds operations office. Turl had picto-recorded, but not reported it, and Kerr and the females had been very grateful. There were other things. Kerr was a habitual criminal who had taken employment on Earth one jump ahead of arrest, and Turl had fixed up a name change. Before the animal idea had occurred to Turl, he had tried to work out something involving Kerr, but it would have been impossible for a cyclo to go into those mountains, and he had been forced to abandon taking Kerr into his confidence. But Kerr had his uses. He was chattering away now, voice dimmed by the helmet he wore and by the din.
"You have to be sure to detect every scrap of radiation dust. Not one isotope must get through to the platform."
"What would it cause?" shouted Johnny.
"There'd be a spark flash on the home planet, like I told you. The teleportation platform there would get disrupted, and we'd catch blazes. It's just the dust. You have to make sure there's none in the dust. No uranium."
"Has it ever happened?" shouted Johnny.
"Blast no," roared Kerr. "And it never will."
"Just dust?" said Johnny.
"Just dust."
"What about a solid piece of uranium?"
"You won't detect that."
"Would anything detect it?"
"We never ship it."
They got along pretty well.
At first, Care had thought the animal was a peculiar thing, but it seemed friendly, and Care didn't have any friends. And the animal asked questions constantly, and Care loved to talk. Better an animal audience than none at all. Besides, it was a favor to Turl and staved off possible disclosures. Turl brought the man-thing down each morning, tied it up to the machine it would operate, and picked it up each night. Care, much cautioned and threatened with the consequences if Johnny got loose, had the right to untie the animal and put it on another machine. The regular operator this morning was glad of a break. The post was extremely dangerous and had killed several cyclos in past decades. One usually got danger pay for it, but that was now suspended with the economy wave. The freighter load was handled. The last bucketful went by on the conveyor belt position, and the whole area drifted down to momentary idleness. The regular operator came back, looking suspiciously at his equipment.
"Did it break anything?"
said the regular operator with a talon jerk at Johnny.
"It hasn't broken anything around here yet," said Care defensively.
"I heard it blew up a blade scraper."
"Oh, that scraper was one that had already blown up," said Care. "You know, the one a few months ago that got Whaler."
"Oh, that one. The one that got a hairline crack in its canopy?"
"Yeah," said Care. "That one."
"I thought this animal blew it up."
"That's just that Zit's making excuses for lack of maintenance."
Nevertheless, the regular operator carefully checked over his uranium detection station.
"Why are you so nervous about it?" said Johnny.
"Hey," said the regular operator. "It talks cyclo."
"He could have had a leak in his helmet," explained Care to Johnny, "or you could have left some dust on the controls."
Johnny looked up at the regular operator.
"You ever had a helmet blow up?"
"Blazes no. I'm still alive, ain't I? And I ain't gonna have any breathe gas blow up around me. Get off my machine. Another freighter is coming in."
Care untied the animal and led it over to the shade of a power pylon.
"That about completes you on the transshipment machinery. Tomorrow, I'm gonna start you on actual mining."
Johnny looked around. "What's that little house over there?" Care looked. It was a small domed structure with a bunch of cooling coils on the back of it.
"Oh, the morgue. Company orders require all dead cyclos to get returned to home planet."
Johnny was interested.
"Sentiment? Families?"
"Oh, no. Blazes, no. Nothing silly like that. They got some dumb idea that if an alien race had dead cyclos to fool around with, they could work out the metabolism and get up to mischief. Also, it's a sort of nose count. They don't want names riding on a payroll after a guy is dead. Somebody else could collect the pay. It used to be done."
"What happens with them? The corpses?"
"Oh, we let them collect and then schedule their teleportation back, just like any other package. When they get home, they bury them. The company has its own cemetery on Cyclo."
"Must be quite a planet." Care glowed with a smile.
"You can say that. None of these damned helmets are canopies. Unlimited breathe gas. The whole atmosphere is breathe gas. Wonderful. Good gravity, not thin like this. Everything a gorgeous purple. And females aplenty. When I get out of here, maybe, if Turl fixes it so I can, I'm going to have 10 wives and just sit all day chomping curbango and rolling the females."
"Don't they have to import all the breathe gas here?"
"Yes, indeed. You can't make it on other planets. It takes certain elements that seldom exist off Cyclo."
"I should think the home planet would run out of atmosphere."
"Oh, no," said Care. "The elements are in the rocks and even the core, and it just makes more and more. See those drums over there?"
Johnny looked at a pyramid of drums that had evidently just come in on reverse teleportation from Cyclo. Trucks with lifts were loading them. And just as he looked, a truck was shifting some barrels aboard the last freighter in.
"Those drums are going back overseas," said Care.
"How many mine sites are there?" said Johnny.
Care scratched where his dome met his collar.
16, I think.
"Where are they located?" said Johnny, being very casual.
Kerr started to shrug and then had a happy thought. He reached into a rear pocket and brought out a sheaf of papers. He had used the back of a map to make some work assignment notes on. He unfolded it. Although it was covered with creases and dirt, it was quite plain. It was the first time Johnny had seen a map of the whole planet. With a searching talon, Kerr counted.
Yep, 16 with 2 substations. That's the lot.
What's a substation? Kerr pointed up at the pylon. Other pylons marched southwest into the distance until they were dwindling specks.
That power line comes in from a hydroelectric installation several hundred miles from here. It's an ancient dam. The company changed all the machinery in it, and it gives us all our power here for transshipment. It's a substation.
Any workers there?
Oh, no. All automatic. There's another substation on the overseas south continent. It's not manned either.
Johnny looked at the map. He was excited, but showed none of it. He counted 5 continents. Every mine site was precisely marked. He reached over and took a pen out of Kerr's breast pocket. How many machines do I still have to be checked out on? Asked Johnny. Kerr thought about it.
There's drillers, hoists.
Johnny reached over and took the map and folded it so there was a fresh blank space on the back. He began to list the machines as Kerr called them out. When the list was finished, Johnny gave Kerr his pen but casually put the map in his pouch. Johnny stood up and stretched. He hunkered back down and said,
"Tell me some more about Cyclo. Sure must be an interesting place."
The assistant operations officer chattered on. Johnny listened intently. The data was a valuable flood, and the map in his pouch crackled comfortingly. When just one man was taking on the whole empire of the Cyclos in the hope of freeing his people, every scrap of information had value beyond price. The engulfing roar of company operations thundered around them in enormous power.